There is nothing morally wrong whatsoever in committing illegal acts against an immoral and unjust system. And the current system wants to exterminate our race. Can you get more immoral and unjust than that?
Hello and welcome to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement. This is episode number 26. My name is Fredrik Weiland, and with me, as always, leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement, Simon Lindberg. Hello, and how are you doing?
Hello, hello. Yes, I am fine, thanks. A lot of things to do in the struggle right now. So, everything is good.
Yeah, we spoke about it earlier when we recorded the Swedish version that many things have happened in the Nordics recently.
Absolutely.
And with the Nordic Resistance Movement as well. And now I guess you will get into this a bit later in the program, but I would anyway want to talk a little bit about when you and I recently visited Devenir Europeo in Spain, and
yes,
attended their conference where you also held a speech.
Mm.
There is an article about it on the NordicResistanceMovement.org called Nordic Resistance Movement Visits Devenir Europeo in Madrid. But here I just thought I would take the opportunity to give some of my own personal reflections on the meeting with our Spanish comrades. Firstly, I must say that we were very well received, extremely well received indeed. We were offered travel and hotel rooms, and they offered food all the time, even though we actually did our best to pay the bill, but it was very hard to do it. They were also very nice and sympathetic overall, all of them. Very camaraderie, and that is one of the Aryan's most important characteristics. And they were also knowledgeable, with a mixture of English, German, or Spanish translated into English. We had a conversation about the likes of Savitri-Devi, Jung, Wolf Sørensen, Serrano. But they were also very knowledgeable about history, especially their own. Wherever we were, whether it was the cemetery for fallen heroes of the Falangist movement, or the Blue Division or the Condor Legion, or at the great Spanish landmark El Oso Real, or the royal site of San Lorenzo de El Oso Real, they had lectures for us. Even during the conference, they gave smaller speeches between the big speeches. So I was very impressed by their professionalism and internal structure. But one thing that was also very positive was they have come to a point in their development that they want to embrace more of the activism that the Nordic Resistance Movement is known for, and that you also talked about in your highly appreciated speech. Our article about the meeting states the following, quote, It was decided that we would deepen our cooperation, as we generally want to achieve the same things, despite some differences. It was also clear to the Swedish delegation that Devenir Europeo, like the Nordic Resistance Movement, strive for quality above quantity, and that their members possess a willingness to self-sacrifice, end quote. And what is worth repeating here is that we have high demands, actually, on those with whom we have an in-depth collaboration. We have friendly relations with many, but there are few with whom we have any deeper cooperation. We do not collaborate with the organizations to be able to show off that we have international collaborations. But there we demand that they are willing to make sacrifices, that they are serious, and that they maintain a high quality through and through. And high quality means, for example, that they maintain good ideological knowledge and that they value exercise and say no to drugs. That they constantly try to be the best they can be. And these things I can definitely say that Devenir Europeo also values. So, yeah. With that, I will also want to thank Devenir Europeo for giving me and Lindberg, of course, the opportunity to meet you in Madrid. Thank you for the hospitality and a very nice weekend. And hopefully we will see you in the Nordics next time.
Yeah, of course, I also need to say thank you again, even though we did
a thousand times.
Yes, but yeah. Officially as well. Yes, absolutely. Thank you. It was a really great weekend. It was great to learn to know you. And of course, I agree with the things you said about the organization.
Yeah, and maybe you will get into them in the next segment as well. Let's see. The next segment, we're going into that. What has been going on in the struggle since last episode? And this is from the beginning of January until now, when we record in the end of February.
Yes, during this period, somewhere between 150 to 200 activities, standard number, has been held throughout the Nordic countries, including everything from ideological study circles to winter wilderness hikings and bathing in ice-cold lakes. And of course, a lot of propaganda have been spread by our members. There have been public leaflettings on streets and squares in several different cities, like, for example, Borås, Vetlanda, and Ludvika, and also public banner activities in several municipalities, like Stockholm, Jönköping, and Luleå, to mention some. Several actions stand out during this period, and the absolutely best one was, according to me, undoubtedly the flash demonstration we held in Stockholm on February the 11th under the slogan "No to NATO, Death to Globalism." A big gathering with uniformed National Socialists with lit torches in hand, led by our flags and a banner, we marched through most of the central parts of the capital for almost 3 hours shouting slogans. We also stopped at 3 different places and gave speeches outside the Turkish embassy, where a Turkish flag was burnt because Turkey are trying to dictate conditions for rewriting the Swedish foundation. On the very central square, Sergels Torg, where both myself and another activist each gave a speech to the around 200 people who were there. And outside the Swedish Parliament building, where a NATO and EU flag was burned. The whole thing went exactly as it should, without any problems whatsoever with the police, with immigrant gangs, or left-wing extremists. And I would like to say that this was actually the most successful unannounced flash demonstration that the Nordic resistance movement have ever carried out during the years. It was so extremely good, actually. Then if we proceed on Holocaust Remembrance Day, a massive propaganda campaign was carried out where banners and posters with the text "Holocaust is a hoax" was put up in 35 different municipalities in Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Iceland. In Norway, also soaps was put out in different places with the same text as an allusion to the lie that German National Socialists made soap from fat of the dead Jews. We got a lot of media publicity for this activity or this propaganda campaign. And as a small bonus to this campaign, 3 days after we published articles about the action on all our Nordic pages, and where we were completely open with the fact that it was us who had carried this activity out, then a small Swedish newspaper published an article stating they had spoken to someone who is a so-called Nazi expert. And this Nazi expert, he was absolutely sure that it was the Nordic resistance movement that was behind this campaign. So as I said, 3 days after we published it ourselves, they revealed this. A real scoop for which I believe this newspaper should be nominated for Journalistic Effort of the Year. Then the day after Holocaust Remembrance Day, a speech was held outside the Israeli embassy where an Israeli flag had to suffer a Holocaust by being burned. This action was actually, even though it was the day after the Holocaust Remembrance Day, it was primarily carried out at this time because Israel recently classified the flag of the Palestinian people as a symbol of terrorism. The video with the burning Star of David has been seen by many tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people on different pages and social medias where it is shared. And hundreds of thousands, maybe it doesn't sound that much, but actually it is a quite good figure. Because of the total censorship we face, we cannot post anything on YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, and other more established platforms. So only through alternative media platforms, it has got tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of views. During this period, as you talked about in the introduction as well, Vedland, and as I just will mention briefly because of that, we also visited Madrid and the Spanish National Socialist Organization Devenir Europeo. I gave a lecture on their annual event Blood Day. So in front of 100 Spaniards or so, I got to tell them about our activities in the Nordic resistance movement and also about the importance of being revolutionaries and embracing fanatism, the fanatism that only National Socialism can give us. It should also be mentioned here that there was an enormous amount of media publicity in Spain, both before and after this event. They wrote about that I, one of the Europe's most dangerous right-wing extremists, would come to Spain. And the media owners did not like this at all. So they really made a huge thing out of this and gave a lot of media attention in Spain, both to the Nordic resistance movement, but also to Devenir Europeo. All in all, it was a very rewarding journey, with, as you mentioned as well, fantastic hospitality, and the bond between Nordic resistance movement and Devenir Europeo was definitely made stronger. And if any Spaniard is listening to this that is not yet connected to Devenir Europeo, make sure to apply for membership immediately. See it as an order. During this segment, we also briefly talk about what is happening in Finland, where the Nordic resistance movement is banned. Even though the organization Sinimustaliike, or the Black and Blue movement, has of course nothing to do with us, I usually mention their activities as we greatly appreciate their struggle. They are in the middle of an election campaign right now and have held and will continue to hold lots of public meetings and public leafletings around the country. And last week, they also announced with pomp and show that they are fielding 88 election candidates. Very impressive and beautiful numbers in more ways than one. 88 candidates in Finland. And if any Finns are listening to this, that is not considering to vote for Sinne Mustalik in the election, then change your opinion about it immediately. That is also an order. And then at the very end of this segment, I would also like to mention that when you hear this, dear listeners, we have just carried out our internal event organizational days. Unfortunately, however, we record this show before the organizational days have been started, and therefore you will have to wait to hear my take on it until the report in the next episode of Leadership Perspective. However, of course, you can read about it. And if you can't do it already now, you should at least be able to read about it. Hopefully, very successful weekend real soon at nordicresistancemovement.org. That was all.
Yeah, and the latest organization days was very, very good. We had a lot of lectures, workshops, boxing competition, stuff like that.
Yeah, and hopefully this one was even better or will be even better. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. We do know that it will be better.
Yeah.
If all goes as planned.
Yes, so. Yes. But that you maybe know already that listens, but we don't when we record this.
Good I do. I have a crystal ball, so all right. I have seen it.
Great. Then you could have taken this part and reported about it as well, but yeah.
No, but for the sake of... we just wait for it.
Yeah.
For the sake of things. Yeah, very good. We move on to the ideological, tactical, philosophical question. And in today's episode, we will talk about bourgeoisie nationalism versus our revolutionary national socialism when it comes to working methods and optics. The American nationalist Rob Rundo from the Rise Above movement recently published a podcast monologue entitled Graffiti and Nationalism, where he goes into many of the lines of thought that we previously talked about here in Leadership Perspective. For example, that propaganda obviously matters and affects people. And if it hadn't done that, the big companies wouldn't have spent as much money on advertising as they do. And that the street fight actually has an added value in that it also exposes the activists who conduct it to important tests and welds them together, which is things that are 100% necessary for the challenges of the future fight. What he also goes into, and which is more relevant to this episode, is that the bourgeoisie nationalists may complain that graffiti, posters, and stickers look bad because they see it as foul littering or vandalism. But despite this, there are no moral wrong in spreading national propaganda through stickers, posters, and graffiti. No, on the contrary. But should we start there? Do you agree with Rundo about this?
Yes, I absolutely do. Had we lived in a healthy national socialist society where a higher Aryan morality was widespread among the proud people, it would, of course, have been a different discussion. But in today's degenerate and perverted society that both the USA and the Nordic countries make up, with huge advertising columns for the soul-killing products of big finance, with vandalism and serious crime going on, then it is, of course, extremely ridiculous to complain about some nationalist graffiti or posters. We have to reach out to the people, and that is, of course, much more important than the potential littering we do through these actions. Our race is dying, for fuck's sake. There are few things I could care less about than some minimal defacement of the streetscape, if at the same time it leads to our people rising up, fighting back, winning, and so that our race can live forever. But then, of course, there is taste and limits. It is, of course, as an example, better to spray paint with stencils or to make real works of art than to just scribble with the graffiti. And posters, they should preferably be put up in cities and communities and not on someone's private property in the countryside, unless they're traitors, and yeah, so on. So, of course, there are, as I said, limits, but as general, I totally agree with Rando. It's, of course, extremely, ridiculous, as I said, to whine about this.
Other things that we are sometimes told look bad is when we argue with the police. What do you think about that?
Yeah, after all, the police are and must be seen as a vital part of the system that we wish all the worst for in order for us to establish our national socialist state instead. One of the stated duties of the police is actually to protect the ones in power. And since we wish to destroy the prevailing order, we automatically become enemies of the police. Having said that, of course, we don't get into trouble with the police unnecessarily in any way. There is a moral aspect in the fact that most police officers are white men, and that several of them probably sympathize with us to a certain extent at least. But there is also a very tactical aspect in the form that the police are armed, and that violence against an officer is a crime with quite high penalty value. Despite this, we will always defend ourselves if we are exposed to violence, and this also goes with the police. They have no free card to just beat us up as they want to without facing any repression. We will also make sure to use our rights even if the police tries to stop us. We have a constitutional right to demonstrate and spread our views, and if the system tries to prevent us from that right, we will use the force necessary to take that right. And in these contexts, when it comes to us being subjected to violence or our rights being violated, what looks right or wrong is, of course, of secondary importance. Also, I do not agree that it looks bad. To be run over by the police, or to need their friendship and protection in order to demonstrate, it illuminates weakness, and therefore it looks bad. It looks much worse than to fight them.
I totally agree, and I know that many Swedes or many Northmen as well, but I'm Swede and know more about the Swedes. They have a lot of respect for when we going in these clashes or at least verbal confrontations with the police, because many Swedes are very submissive towards the police, and so they respect that, actually. And I know that also the police, policemen respect us, and in some cases also fear us. So
yeah, there was some story some years ago, a couple of years ago, I think, where some Twitter police I don't know if you have them around other countries, but we have Twitter polices in Sweden. And he wrote that Nordic resistance movement, when facing us, then the police have to use more violence than facing anyone else. So yeah. They face football hooligans, they face these criminal foreign gangs and so on, but when they face us, they need to use the most violence, at least according to this police officer. So it says something.
Yeah, it does. But moving on to a closely related issue, there are those who think we shouldn't be fighting Reds in the streets, that we shouldn't lower ourselves to their level. Do you agree?
No, I do not. But as you said, it is a closely related question. And also the answer could be said to be quite similar to the previous question. I mean, it doesn't matter actually what it looks like. We will not let anyone subjugate us or use violence against us without fighting back for all we are worth. And furthermore, and even more important maybe, depending on how you look at it, it looks much worse to just take a beating than to fight back. And it looks much worse to just let the system with its police take care of one's problem. A strong force, of course, solves its own problems and thereby fights back. Showing strength always looks good. And I mean also that we have been doing this all of the years, always constantly fighting back. Also, that has led to that we very seldom need to fight back anymore. Because, the Reds, they doesn't dare to attack us very often. They need to be really many to dare to attack us. And the ironic truth is that they have weakened so much in Sweden and the Nordic countries, so it's very, very seldom they are that many anymore.
Yeah, they are only into gossip and slandering, actually. So it's a little bit sad, but yeah.
Yeah, but we can see, of course, also, it has been now, I've seen footage from Germany and I've seen footage from Hungary just last weeks that they still have active Antifa, quite violent Antifas there. To all nationalists over there, fighting them back is the only language they understand. But, of course, you already know this, I'm sure of.
Yeah, they have some, they are more violent, but some of them, I would say, but we have met those German, at least, Antifas, and, in German and in Sweden as well, when they travel here, and they are mostly like pussycats. So,
yeah, but of course, I mean, because these videos that have been shown around on Telegram and so on,
there are
like 5-6 Reds against one or two guys, you know, and they have like weapons and stuff. So of course, even pussycats can make damage when they are that many against one.
Yeah, and I think in Germany they have like fight clubs also, Antifas, and I don't think. They have tried it in Sweden, and they maybe have some of them can fight, but
but at least fight them back with everything you're worth. That is, don't wait for the police to come and handle your problems. First of all, the police will not handle your problems, and secondly, you look like cocks, and that is never a good thing.
No. But all this type of activity sometimes leads to our members being convicted in courts and forced to serve prison sentences for vandalism, assault, etc. Doesn't that look bad anyway? Doesn't it look better if our members go unpunished?
There is nothing morally wrong whatsoever in committing illegal acts against an immoral and unjust system. And the current system wants to exterminate our race. can you get more immoral and unjust than that? But it is, of course, tactically bad to have our members in prison instead of out on the streets, as they do less good behind bars. However, this must never prevent our members from doing the right thing. But of course, they must never commit crimes without a good purpose, where self-defense or spreading propaganda was the goal. And of course, they must never unnecessarily break the law. It looks bad with criminally charged members if you don't know the background of their crime. If you do, on the other hand, know the full story, then you understand that their sentences, they should be seen as medals they have received for their valiant fight against the system. Furthermore, in 100 cases out of 100, it always looks worse not to act when it is right to do so than it looks to be convicted of something, unless that something is some deeply immoral act. That is the only exception, I would say.
Another thing many members of are convicted of is carrying a knife in a public place. Some are also convicted of possessing illegal firearms. Doesn't look good, does it?
This system that we live under today opens up our borders to serial criminals and armed aliens. They dox us nationalists in their media and use lies and black propaganda to portray us as the evil of the world. They let left-wing extremists go free when they commit crime against us. Our members, and all whites for that matter, must of course be allowed to take whatever measures they feel they need to be able to defend themselves, to defend their families, and defend their property. I don't care what measures everyone takes, but this must be up to each and every one of them. I also don't think it looks bad for someone to take measures to be able to defend themselves, even if these measures are against the law. So I don't see any moral wrong in that at all.
That's good.
You can keep your firearm, Vaidlan.
Yeah. No, please don't speak about it here. Yeah, but clothing then. Some think that we should dress more stylishly and wear blazers and the like instead of the practical clothing many of our members wear. Do you have any comment on that?
Which clothes look best is very much a matter of taste, both among our members and among the general public. Some people think suits or blazers look best, then let them wear that. And some others think wilderness clothes look best. We represent the working people, and we want our members to look like part of them, not for them to look like politicians and sleazy salesmen. But having said that, of course, there is a point also the other way around about this. We also, of course, don't want our members to look like Third Reich LARPers or bums either. Pure and clean, and as people generally go dressed, I think that is a good benchmark. And then, of course, many of our members are interested in training and outdoor life, and therefore it's also logical that this, to some extent, visible in the clothing style. However, we do not allow our members to dress according to any subculture when representing the organization. So, in other words, even though we have many people that maybe listen to RAC music or metal or punk or whatever, you are not allowed to dress like a skinhead, a metalhead, or a punk, but you must shape up when you represent Nordic Resistance Movement.
So, no hip-hoppers, even though there are some that listen to Mr. Bond.
No hip-hop subculture, no. But I don't think Mr. Bond appreciate that either, actually.
No, I don't think so, actually.
No.
And then we have the tattoos. Why do we recruit people with lots of tattoos? It's not very good optics, is it?
We have, as we have talked about in earlier episode, I know when we discussed the rules and expectations of our members, we have clear and distinct rules that our members are not allowed to tattoo their hands, their face, their neck, and their head. But in some cases, a person applying for membership may have already had these types of tattoos done before applying to us. And then we do not force them to remove these tattoos to be able to join us. However, they can count on getting less outwardly roles in our struggle than people who do not have these types of very clear and visible tattoos. And of course, it is also not something we see as positive if the individuals have tattoos in their faces or the likes. And this is held against them during the recruitment evaluation. But if they have several other good qualities, they can still be allowed to join us, yes. So I agree in this case, actually. I agree with the bourgeois nationalists. It does not look great with a lot of visible tattoos, especially not with tattoos in the face and such. But I must mention, I still rather have a fully tattooed National Socialist fanatic by my side than an untattooed faggot bourgeois conservative any day of the week.
Yeah, it's not that hard a choice there.
No.
Yeah. Are there more things you think look bad?
Yeah, I mean, we think about optics all the time, actually, and we are quite self-critical, so there is actually quite a lot of things we discuss internally that looks bad, or things we look after an activity and said we could have done that instead, it would have looked better, and so on. We were already into tattoos and subcultures, as well as the very important thing to show weakness by allowing ourselves to be run over. What we haven't mentioned are piercings. That is also something I and the organization have a hard time with, especially on men. And this is also prohibited by our rules for our members. Then, of course, it doesn't look good if our representatives are heavy overweight or extremely skinny. It would also definitely not be okay with someone who had like pink or green hair or something. And we do not allow our members to smoke or be under influence of alcohol during activities, etc., because that also looks bad, except for also changing people's judgment. It looks really, really bad, so therefore we are against it. It is very important to us, actually, that you look okay and that you behave well. However, we may have a somewhat different view of what this means than what some bourgeoisie have. If you look and act like an Aryan freedom fighter, then you look and act good, and then you are most certainly welcome with us.
Yeah, for sure. But we do have, they are not many, but we do have people that are overweight, have tattoos in their faces from the time before. And it's important to know, and that they know, that they are not the people that we put our camera on.
Mm.
And that's the deal, actually, when they go into us. That past sins with the tattoos and faces can come to haunt them in a way. They can't be that public that the other people are. And the overweight people, yeah, same with them, but they can train, and we train them. So, and there are quite a lot of people that have been overweight when they got into our movement, and a year later or two, they are in good shape.
And also people that has been really skinny when they joined us, but then they have worked out and become quite beefy.
Yeah.
So, but yes, optics are important, and we think about optics all the time. But optics is not everything. You can still be a good member that provides good stuff, even if you're not the best looking man or woman out there. There are, of course, your inside is in many cases more and much more important than your outside, of course. But as a National Socialist fanatic, often you can change your outside also to represent your inside better.
Yeah. As a final question and conclusion to today's episode, why is our revolutionary National Socialist view of how we should look and work better than the bourgeoisie nationalist one?
Because the bourgeoisie approach is about how best to fit into today's society. How to look best according to the rules of the game that our enemies set up for us. How to not put your fingers in someone's eyes. How to just run with the stream smoothly. We care very little about all of this. And instead, we look for tactics and we look for National Socialist morality. How are we most successful in our struggle in the short as well as the long term? Then we believe that values, eternal values such as strength, honesty, and honor, weigh more heavily and are significantly more important than what is fashion right now or how the media and celebrities say we should and shouldn't act. So our way is the way to win this thing. The bourgeoisie way is the way to float with the stream. And remember, only dead fishes float with the stream.
Yeah. And with that, we end the show for this time. You can send questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes of Leadership Perspective. And that you can do that to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. And you can read more on our webpage, nordicresistancemovement.org. Next episode will be available the 10th of May. See you then. Bye.
Yeah, and now make sure to do something really cool on 1st of May. Do something really cool in the name of National Socialism and let the world know about it. Do it alone or do it with your local National Socialist organization. You know we will do it. Take care. Goodbye.